Vopal Network is the bomb, the cutting edge of geekdom. Comics, advice, D&D, movies, video games, RPGs. Finding it's easy, just stay calm. VorpalNetwork.com.
This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where Out of Print is available again. And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store.
Hi, I'm Eric Scott DeBee, author and writer in Forgotten Realms, and you're listening to The Tome Show.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 183. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner.
And I'm your co-host, Tracy Hurley, and in this episode, we're headed into the cold coastline frontier town of Neverwinter as we interview Eric Scott DeVee and Ari Marmel, two of the writers of the Neverwinter campaign setting.
That's right, and we had a good interview with them. They're good guys, and they've both been on the show before. They're fun to talk to, and Tracy loves them both.
I do, and I frequently, you know, fangirl squee on Twitter over them, so... It's awesome.
Yeah, but it's not hard to get you to fangirl squee over people.
This is true. This is the downside of me.
The downside of you. speaking of being a fan and squeeing over things, it was pointed out to me recently that if I were to go over to the d20monkey.com webcomic, there's a certain Tracy Sarah Darkmagic being featured in the current story arc.
There is. It's been pretty cool. There's been two with me in it, two comics, so that's been awesome. And there's a whole story arc with Dallas Noble, who is awesome.
So now, do you get any sort of editorial control over your character on there? Or did you just say, yeah, go ahead and use it, and he's going crazy?
It's mostly he's going crazy. He often shows me a little before it goes live, but I trust him. He's a really great guy, Brian.
He's a good guy. I am kind of hoping that your arc concludes with, some sort of foul ritual where a demon sort of bursts out of your skin and tries to destroy the game store.
What?
Because I think it would be awesome to find out that deep down, you're a hellspawn.
I'm a hellspawn?
Yeah.
Oh, at least you didn't go with, like, succubus or something.
That's what she said.
That's what she said. I just love the pixelated parts of Larry in the first one with me. That was awesome.
All right, now we're getting too much inside baseball for people who haven't read it yet.
So this is why you should go read it.
D20monkey.com is a fantastic D&D-based webcomic, or gaming, I guess, based webcomic anyway.
Right.
But it's awesome.
And you will find out why I don't like dungeons, so.
Excellent. Let's get more into other news that doesn't involve pixelated DM genitalia.
Okay. Sure, if you want to be boring.
Now, are you saying Facebook games are boring? Because that's the next topic of conversation. Man, I'm really good at segues tonight.
You're awesome. But no, the Heroes of Neverwinter Facebook game, I have not found to be boring. I mean, it's not playing a video game, but I found it pretty fun. How about you? Have you tried it out yet?
Yeah, I've although I got in. It's in a beta right now that they open up. I assume they're still just sort of slowly opening up spots for it.
I thought I read right before we got on here that they're making it open beta.
Right on. So it's anybody should be able to get on at this point. That's awesome. So I got on a little while ago. Just because I kept sort of clicking the link over and over again until I got in. Just because I wanted to sort of see what it was about. And I played through the introduction, and that's about as far as I got. Enough that I sort of think I get the idea. But at the same time, I discovered... No, I didn't discover. I've known for a long time that Facebook games kill my productivity. And there's a lot of projects I want to do that I don't get to do because I waste time playing stupid little things that don't matter. So I try to limit my time on those kinds of things. So I haven't gone much past the introduction yet.
Yeah, I forget what level I am. I think I'm like 5th level or something. I really want to get to 10th because I want to try the build your own dungeon thing.
Oh, you get to build your own dungeon?
Yeah.
And then like other people go through it?
I don't know about that part, but I think so.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, but you have to get to level 10, and I just haven't had time to do that yet. But that's what I'm really looking forward to.
So are there some good social features in the whole thing, too?
In a way. So you can, if you happen to be online at the same time somebody's using your character. So basically, when you play, you can borrow your friend's characters to help fill out your party.
Mm-hmm.
And so if your friend happens to be online at the same time, they can go into what's called spectator mode and give you buffs during the adventure.
Right on.
So that's pretty cool.
Is it interesting enough to be in spectator mode that people would likely do that for a while? Like,
well, that was the hard part I had is, right. You know,
I can't see myself. It sounds like a cool idea, but I can't see myself sitting around for 2 hours watching somebody else play a game.
Right, so it works a lot better if your friend, you can do AI for the characters that aren't your one character, and it goes a lot faster if the person's using that. If the person's trying to play each character in the group, then it goes forever, and I just don't have the time to stay in spectator mode. I wish there was a way to do the buffs without going in the spectator mode, but...
Right on. All right, well, that's cool. But it's, I mean, even the idea that you're building your party from your friends' characters is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
I suspect I am not in your party.
Maybe.
you don't pay attention to who's in your party?
Well, I mean, it's probably been about a week or so since I've played, because I've been super busy. And so I don't, so you build your party every time you go for an adventure. You know, I could go to the Neverwinter Woods with a totally different group than in Neverwinter itself.
I hear you. All right. So, anyway, I don't have a transition that time. Dang it, I blew that segue. Let's talk about the book club. What are we reading right now? Assuming Sam, who's actually here listening in quietly in the background but not saying anything, gets this edited and out for us real quick. What are we currently reading?
We are reading God Catcher.
Is it God Catcher or The God Catcher?
It's The God Catcher.
The God Catcher. By Aaron Evans, and do not be fooled, as I was. God Catcher is not... in reference to the story or what's going on outside of God Catcher is the name of a statue that they seem to have built an apartment on top of. And that's where the main character lives.
It's where I want to live. Because it's a pretty awesome apartment building.
It is. It is. I expected, though, when I picked up a book called God Catcher or The God Catcher, that it would involve the machinations of deities.
Yeah, you'd be wrong.
But that was... Although, in fairness, in the introduction that Ed Greenwood wrote for it, he explains that pretty quickly right off the bat.
Yeah. And there are other machinations going on, just not of deities.
Excellent. That's true. It deals a lot with dragons, which we both like, and we'll talk about that in the book club. Being recorded on Monday, the something. We haven't set that up with the author yet. But people should definitely check it out. We are... testing out this technology called this website called Mixlr, and we have been starting to do our book club episodes live so people could actually listen in and leave comments and chat about it and what have you, so that, you know, we get some audience participation. And the more we get used to that, the more people participate in that, we might start doing some of the interviews with people around, so you could actually listen to an interview, ask questions of the author as we're talking about it, and then we'll ask those for you. You know, you don't need to set up an account with Mixlr. You go there and then you can leave a comment logging in with Facebook or Twitter. So it's actually pretty smooth.
Yeah.
I think the last time we used it, we had all of like 3-4 people listening in as we discussed Erebus Kale.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And speaking of book club, we should mention our next book club because it has, well, I guess it's almost been confirmed anyway. not the book. We know what the book is, but the interview has almost been confirmed. And Tracy, what are we reading?
I forget the name of the book.
So we're reading the next R.A. The upcoming R.A. Salvatore book, Neverwinter. And yeah. That's going to be our October book club book. And the plan right now is that we will be talking to Mr. Salvatore at the end of October to conclude that. And, you know, if we get this Mixlr thing going on and more people start showing up for those, we might be having a broadcast live with the audience right there with you, able to ask questions as we go. So that could be fun. Assuming he's okay with that. I haven't actually checked. So that's the next couple of months of Book Club, or this month and next month of Book Club. And I hope other people are enjoying that. I know the downloads are typical of what we do for book reviews, but I hope other people are reading the books with us, and I'd like to hear from you guys as well. If you want to jump on Skype with us, like McCoy did, I think, two book clubs ago, that's awesome. I'd love to have more of you guys on to chat with us about it, too. So let us know. Drop us a line. I guess it's time to talk sponsor, unless you've got any other news.
I think that's it.
Are you showing up in any more web comics that we should be looking for, or publishing any books or DDI articles or anything soon?
Not too soon, no.
Okay.
It's been a little quiet on that front, although there's background writing, but nothing that I can talk about yet.
Uh-huh. Okay. Very cool. Then let's go ahead and talk about our sponsor, Noble Knight Games. Noble Knight is a local-friendly game store, but they also have an awesome online store where you can buy just about anything you've ever wanted. Whether it's new or old, they specialize in getting stuff that's out of print. And if you want to get rid of some of your old stuff, they'd be happy to take it off your hands and give you credit to get all kinds of new stuff with it. And our pick for this episode is the Forgotten Realms campaign setting from 3rd Edition, which they still have in good quality and at a pretty hefty discount, something like $19 off.
Wow.
Which, that's pretty good. I mean, it's almost half off. They have $21 for near mint condition. Hasn't been in print for 10 years. That's a steal to me. I actually picked it because I was surprised from the Noble Knight homepage, front page. It's actually listed as one of their top 10 best-selling items right now. So,
oh, wow.
An out-of-print book that hasn't been published in 10 years being one of their top-selling items is pretty impressive. And it was a good book. If you're interested in the Forgotten Realms pre-Spell Plague, it's got tons and tons of information. And like many campaign settings, it's just full of a lot of setting detail and fluff and story hooks and all that kind of stuff. So even if you're not playing 3rd Edition, there's lots of great things there for you.
Sweet.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more, Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
We're here now with two of the designers of the new Neverwinter campaign setting, Eric Scott DeVee and Ari Marmel. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In fact, welcome back to the show. Neither one of you are our first-timers on. Repeat or returning guests.
Well, Ari's been a more frequent guest than yours truly.
Ari comes on, about once a year or so?
Something like that.
Very good.
I'll come on more often when I get a trailer.
Okay.
As soon as I have a trailer or an office with my name on it, I'll be happy to show up more often.
Excellent. Well, we'll get to work on that. We'll try to see if we can't launch your career to that level.
All right.
Go, Ari.
Woo! He didn't specify where the trailer would be, though, so
that'll
be fun.
Yeah. Anyway, today we're here to talk about Neverwinter, the new 4th edition campaign setting, which you kind of have to specify, right? Because there's 1,000 things that WotC have put out in the last few months that are all called Neverwinter. But this is sort of the core book that everything else sort of revolves around, at least in my mind it is. So I thought it might be good to start off with... for those people who may not know, what is Neverwinter?
Well, in this particular, the book itself is essentially a heroic tier campaign setting unto itself. It's I mean, yes, of course, it's a Forgotten Realms supplement, but it stands alone to most intents and purposes. You can drop it in almost anywhere, build an entire campaign around it, delving into the surrounding Forgotten Realms as much or as little as you choose. Eric, do you want to add or expand on that, or is that a?
I certainly will. It also draws on this great long history. It harkens back to the Neverwinter Nights game, the Neverwinter Nights 2 game, and it ties into this trilogy that R.A. Salvatore, I don't know if you've heard of that guy, is writing about the whole region, and it ties into all kinds of gaming stuff. So the book itself is like this one white-hot little item that connects to thousands of other things. So it's kind of the epicenter of your Neverwinter campaign. It's pretty cool. I like it.
And they've done a lot of things sort of centering around Neverwinter. There's games and what the Gen Con had sort of a reality game going on, a sort of a scavenger hunt thing happening, and video games and novels and all kinds of stuff.
And encounter
season.
Yeah,
I don't know how the Drow stole that, you know, real-life Neverwinter game at Gen Con. I don't know how that happened. We were so far ahead. Good never wins.
Which faction were you? You were the good guys?
Lord Neverember's faction, of course.
Oh, I see. That's unfortunate for you.
Yes, well, I'm sure a lot of us feel that way.
So, Neverwinter is a heroic tier setting.
Yes.
But it's also an area of the Forgotten Realms, although it sounds like you've designed the book in such a way that it's not hard to sort of plop into any setting. Is that accurate to what your goals were?
I would say so. I mean, it's always going to fit best into Forgotten Realms. That's where it comes from. That's where the plot hooks tie into. But one could easily, I think, build an entire homebrew campaign around it, or with a small amount of tweaking, drop it into other settings, certainly.
And I think it gives a DM that option as to making it very localized, or if people are starting to get bored and want to expand outward, they have this whole other setting to go to.
I think that's definitely something that some of the earlier setting books were missing, other than the default Nenter Vale, there wasn't a lot of places that you had a fully fleshed out place to go to. I mean, Hammerfest did a little bit, but not to the same degree as the Neverwinter and the Shadowfell book.
Which, Eric, you also worked on the Shadowfell book, right? Did they just really like you on settings?
I don't know. I just got really lucky one year. And they decided that, hey, let's get a lot of freelance from this guy. So it worked out very well.
Sweet.
And the Shadowfell project was so fun, and the Neverwinter came up right after, and I just jumped right on, so I was very fortunate.
Very good. Ari, you were going to say something, I think. Did we interrupt you?
Oh, I'm usually going to say something, and it's rarely of any import. So if I remember what it was, I'll come back to it.
Okay. Now, so what's the difference in working on this kind of book compared to other products you may have worked on? As Eric, you mentioned having worked on Shadowfell, which has some similarities being another campaign setting. But also, I imagine there's some differences, and I'm curious to hear what some of those might be.
Well, I think with the Shadowfell, there was considerably less kind of established about it. There was less tone. You had one book, the Manual of the Planes, basically, that told you what the Shadowfell was sort of like. And we didn't have Heroes of Shadow yet. So we were just kind of winging it from there. And when you're working in the realms, on the other hand, well, you have about 50,000 books that all give you different bits and pieces of the tone of the realms. So I think there was a difference in terms of how much you had to create on your own versus how much you had to just kind of soak up what was already there and then put your own particular spin on it. And I've been playing in the realms for, you know, more than half my life now, and I'm very, very comfortable with it. So I was totally up for that. I was like, yes, bring it on. And as opposed to the Shadowfell, where I was like, well, I don't know this quite as well, but this still seems really fun. So it was just a very different sort of design experience in that respect. The,
and I came at it from kind of the opposite direction, in as much as I have never... This is my first Forgotten Realms project that I've worked on. And while I have, you know, I've read some of the previous books, both role-playing and fiction, I've never been heavily steeped in it. So for me, there was a great deal of reading and research to do, which I did. I mean, I think Eric will remember there were times I came and asked him about some of the realm's background. There were things I looked up, and of course there was the, you know, development team after me. So any blatant mistakes I made should have been caught. But I know that in my case, because this was a new kind of book, a new kind of campaign setting, they wanted to bring in somebody who actually wasn't steeped in Realms lore, just so they didn't have... they wanted an outside perspective, essentially. They wanted to make sure that there were details or aspects added in that weren't just repeats from older stuff. Not that I'm saying everything Eric did was a repeat, but you know what I'm saying, an outside perspective, basically.
Well, and sometimes as Tracy and I have discovered as we discuss various things or read novels or whatever, we discover that sometimes it's important to have the perspective of somebody who has less experience with that canon to figure out what was missing, you know? Oh, you never explained this thing because most Realms fans just automatically know. Well, everybody else doesn't, so I think that would be useful.
Yeah, I'm the newbie.
I will say, as far as your question about this being different, I also worked on the 4th edition Eberron campaign books, both the player's book and the campaign setting. And it's a very different kind of experience, the Neverwinter. It's this book is so much more focused on a local setting with much more intrinsic characters and plot elements. While for some that makes it a narrower utility, I found it actually much and this is coming from a big fan of Eberron, but I found just the process of working on this kind of setting to be much more interesting and much more grabbing on a creative level, because it does let you play with much more specific plot elements, more specific DM and player hooks. I would actually love to see more of the campaign settings done in this style in the future than in the broader full world style.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I was going to ask or follow up with that. Neverwinter is very focused on a very specific city and the area around it. And you've got a whole book dedicated to that, which sometimes you hear players screaming, you know, that's the kind of stuff I want, right? I want more detail and more information and all that kind of stuff. On the other hand, sometimes you get the opposite response of, well, now there's just so much there that I feel like there's no wiggle room for me as a player or DM to squeeze my story into. I'm curious how you approach writing the book in such a way that you can provide all that deep detail that people want without constraining story.
Well, the approach on the Neverwinter book itself was that a lot of the detail comes in the form of story hooks and background suggestions, as in the setting as written, this is what the forces of Fae are doing. This is what this faction is doing. This is what that faction is doing. And it gives the DM a lot of flexibility to use them to whatever extent he or she chooses, but there's also still plenty of room for the DM to add their own stuff, to ignore the parts they don't want. A portion of the book, as I was saying, basically comes in the form of hooks as opposed to concrete details. There's much less of this building is here, this part of the city is known for these imports and exports. I guess I would say it's more, how to put this?
Inspiration.
It's as much of a story building tool as a setting building tool, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it was very good to have this particular team that we had, that sort of balance between the long-standing Realms person, the fairly new Realms person, the insider at Wizards, that was Matt Cernit. And we got this whole little balanced approach between here's a campaign setting that's true to the canon that sticks with the accepted tone of the setting, but still gives you all kinds of room to do whatever you really want in your campaign. I mean, we got, you know, something for everything, everybody in this campaign setting. There are shadow people, there are undead people, there are orcs, there are, you know, crazy squid things. I mean, there's just so much, and we managed to cram it all into the book. I'm still a little surprised that we pulled that off.
I actually did have a different question, kind of following up on that, because there are, like, as you guys mentioned, a fair number of factions and stuff you can pull in, and one of my friends was wondering, do you have any suggestions, like, what's a reasonable number for different campaign sizes? Like, how many for a particular number of levels or something? Because you probably should limit it to some degree, I think, unless you feel you can handle all of the factions present. Do you guys have any suggestions about that?
I think it's a lot of that's going to depend on playing style. I would agree that trying to work them all in, or at least work them all in equally, is likely to be a little unfocused. But then again, there are some people who don't want a plot arc heavy campaign. And for them, they might be quite happy having a brief adventure involving the Aboleth and then a brief adventure involving the werewolves. I personally prefer a little more focused plot with a smaller number of subplots. But even there, I don't know if putting a hard number on the factions, because, you know, you might have a long-term plot based on two of them, but then a couple of very short-term plots based on others. It's almost a wishy-washy answer, but I'd say, you know, go with however many seem to really be capturing the imagination of the DM and the players.
Yeah, I think that's...
All I would say as far as as you say, don't feel constrained. Don't feel that you have to include them all. But as long as you feel free to pick and choose at need, I wouldn't go in with a set number in mind.
Yeah, I'd listen to Ari's advice on that. I'd recommend starting small. Do like one or two at the beginning, and then kind of expand it until you reach that equilibrium where your players are just really happy and really involved in the game without being too confused. Mm-hmm. And if it gets too confusing, you know, just destroy one of the factions. It's all good.
So to play off of that, and give people at the same time, give people a little idea about what's in the book and how these things work. If each of you were to start a Neverwinter campaign, which faction would you start off with? Which is the one that you're the most interested in telling a story arc about?
Well, it's tricky because I am a big fan of the various Far Realms aberrant creatures. So odds are that any plot I came up with would involve the Aboleth sovereignty. But I tend to have those creatures operating in the background, so it wouldn't be obvious from the start that it was involving them. I like the Thaeans. I like the combination of the undead magics, the goals they have, the kind of large, overt threat they pose. Probably the Thaeans, and then one of the more subtle factions, one of the city of criminal groups like the Dead Rats or the Ashmedai. Probably them with the Aboleth lurking in the background is where I'd begin it.
Okay. Eric?
Well, assuming I didn't start with the encounters season, which involves New Neverwinter and the Dead Rats and the Harpers and the Rebels, I would probably make my own story involving New Neverwinter, the Harpers, the Dead Rats, and the Rebels. Because I really like the political end of things, and I like the fake good that you have with New Neverwinter. That he pretends to be such a good guy and a savior for the city, but he's really not. And I think that the Neverwinter Noble quest is so intrinsic to the actual city part of the setting that I would probably start off with that. And then, as the characters adventure along, they peel back the surface and discover these other lurking factions. And probably involve the Aboleths, much like Ari's mentioning, but they wouldn't be overt at first. They would be controlling people, like Aboleths do. Yeah. So I might have them all involved from the beginning, but the only ones the PCs would really encounter are the new Neverwinter and the Rebels at the beginning.
Right on.
Would you have the other ones working in the background, and how would how would that come out?
Well, see, part of what we were trying to do in the Neverwinter book is to have factions where the people are dynamic. They're doing things, not just sitting in their, you know, personal bedchambers waiting for the PCs to storm in and kill them. So the Ashmedai are looking for this particular artifact. The Thayans are hunting for the Crown of Neverwinter. The new Neverwinter is slowly tightening its grip on the city. And so I would keep a running log of, you know, what the individual factions are up to. And then if the heroes stumble across one of those things, they can disrupt those plans out of the attention of the faction, etc.
I would do that with some of them. And I would probably also keep a few in reserve to where I might never use them at all. But if one of them seems like it would play really well off of something that the PCs did, introduce them then at that point, even if I hadn't previously had plans for them. You know, keep a few of them basically in reserve for the PCs did something I didn't expect or opened up an unseen story potential. I have one of the factions that I can use to take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I think the shades work really well in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stuff they're doing is kind of outside the city, but they can swoop in for any reason at any time.
I was going to say, the shades and the various werewolf factions as well.
Yes, yes.
And
we put a lot of stuff in that book.
I was going to say, it seems to me that just about every big villain group that exists in the Forgotten Realms somehow has made it to Neverwinter. Even the ones that, you know, live on the literal opposite side of the world.
That is kind of a remarkable coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah. how that happens.
Was that intentional? Is there something about Neverwinter that sort of attracts this kitchen sink of evil?
Kitchen sink of evil. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think you can approach that from an in-setting or a meta perspective. On a meta perspective, certainly if you have this one product, this one city, this one place that's going to serve as a campaign all of its own, you want to showcase as much of the cool stuff about the setting that you can. So on a meta level, you know, I'm sure it was deliberate.
It's helpful to put in those hooks for, you know, other people to expand outside of Neverwinter into this.
Exactly. I mean, even as it is, there are factions that make a small appearance that I kind of wish we could have done more with. The Cult of the Dragon is really there only as an adjunct to the... I hope I'm not spoiling anything for players here. Should I shut up?
No, go ahead.
No.
Go for it.
The Cult of the Dragon is there only kind of as an adjunct for what the Thayans are up to. You know, if we had had a book twice this big, I'd love to have done more with them.
Sure.
So even there, I mean, it's not like everybody is there to the same extent, certainly. But I think for the purpose this book serves, on a meta level, on a creative, on a writing level, yeah, you want to showcase as many of the villain factions as you can without making the place seem so crowded as to be ludicrous.
Now, I'm curious, as we discuss some of the factions, and some of them, you know, from opposite sides of the world and what have you, I'm specifically thinking like Thay, right? You literally cannot be further away in the Forgotten Realms from Neverwinter than Thay. Just about, anyway. But that wasn't necessarily your doing. R.A. Salvatore introduced Thay as the villain in his novel in the series that started with Gontalgrim. And I'm curious, what's sort of that order of events? Did you guys start working on this book, or did Wizards sort of come up with an outline of what was going to be in the book and then give that to R.A. Salvatore? Or did R.A. Salvatore write his book, you guys read that, said, okay, well, these factions we definitely got to put in, and then you could add some more on your own? Or do you even know? Is that something Watsy decided?
Oh, I'm not sure.
R.A. Salvatore wrote his book before we started work on this.
Yeah, and
so
I don't
his
know.
Book,
go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. His book was in the outline and fully written phases before we were substantially into the project. So part of what we had to do was conform to what he had created, and he involved Gontalgrim, he involved the Ashmedai, he involved the Thayans, and he really packed stuff in that book too.
Yeah.
So we were like, well, we got to put it on that level.
Right.
So, and include now, the same things that he talked about.
Now, yeah. Of course, as far as who decided what was going to be in his book, I don't know, you know, what was his and what was Watsi's suggestion.
Sure.
I know that as far as us working on it, we got a pretty comprehensive outline from Matt Cernut. But that's standard procedure for freelancing is usually the structure of the book and the basic idea of what we want to hit points, you know, A, B, C, Q, X, and Y. Come from Wizards of the Coast. What we do is we decide how to hit those points, how to expand on them, what kind of story hooks to include with them. So how we included some of these factions was up to me and Eric, but whether to include them was already part of the assignment.
Sure. And I imagine that this wasn't necessarily your guys' call, but I'm curious as to the reasoning behind the focus on heroic tier, because as you read some of the novels, they're clearly not facing heroic tier threats.
Just the concept of the product, yeah. I believe. And mm-hmm. I think it's good to have that focus. So even if it wasn't my call, like, clearly they had already decided it before Ari and I came on, still would have pushed for this sort of thing.
Now, I can you know, hazard guesses and theories as to why they chose to go that route, and I understand and agree with most of them. I know that, well, for one thing, customer survey after survey shows that heroic tier is the most popular. Now, you can argue cause and effect for that as far as there being more heroic tier books, but I know that's the case. I know part of it also is they're hoping Neverwinter will serve as a gateway to some people. People who come to it from the computer games or the novels or other products, and in that case, you want a setting that's going to heavily support early level play.
Yeah.
Neverwinter campaign standing. Gateway drug.
There you go.
So I guess one thing that I was admittedly a little surprised to see were the backgrounds for the, particularly the elf backgrounds. Do you guys have any information, like anything you want to share about that development, like having wood elves and stuff that, for the most part, people had been keeping out of 4th edition?
So you're talking about the inclusion of the sub-races?
Yeah.
Well, that was something that, well, I didn't design those. Matt designed those, as far as I know. Okay. And as far as I understand, Wizards just decided that it was time to do that. Because they hadn't done it in 4th edition so far. They wanted to keep subraces more at a cultural sort of level and not have so many mechanical things behind them.
Yeah.
But finally they decided that they were just going to make it kind of official. And so they are mechanically different, but not substantially mechanically different. It's more like a cultural difference in the elves and the dwarves. And I don't know why they decided to do it now. I'm glad that they did. I think it's awesome. I guess maybe they tried it out with the Forgotten Realms setting, doing it one way, which was just putting in the couple of feats and then saying, oh yeah, it's a cultural thing. And then they decided that they needed something more substantial. So I don't know. I don't actually have an answer. Just okay. Speculation.
Yeah. No, I happen to like them. Yeah, I'm glad, but I'm also glad that, like, personally, as a fan, I'm glad they did it this way. Because I do know a little bit about them from previous editions, and I think doing it this way helps not confuse people as much. If this is going to be the gateway drug, you can just totally ignore subraces if you really wanted to. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, they're in here and they're awesome. I don't know.
Yep.
Right on. So you mentioned that, you know, obviously some of you guys don't just collaborate 100% on everything. Some of you, each of you sort of has your own little sections that you focus on or parts that you do or whatever. And I'm curious, you know, for each of you, what are some of the things that were sort of your baby? What were some of the things that you really worked on? And you know, we can look at this and say, this is Ari. This is Ari's section of the book.
Well, they're pretty spread out, but some of the sections that I did most of, and I want to to emphasize that most of. There's always some collaboration. There's trading of ideas. There's, you know, rewrites and development at Wizards of the Coast. So, you know, nobody can claim 100% of any one section. But for the most part, the sections I did that I'm happiest with would be the sections on Evernight and the Shadowfell in the Forgotten Realms. Which is interesting that they gave me that section since Eric worked on the Shadowfell book, but I'm glad they did.
I'm glad, too. I think you did a great job.
Thank you. I really liked working on portions of the Gauntlegrim sections, portions of the Fae sections. And I also did most of the stuff on Netheril.
Okay. Now, before you get too far away from those, for anybody who may not be a Realms aficionado or familiar with some of this, could you explain what some of those places or things are?
Okay. Well, Evernight is basically the reflection of Neverwinter in the Shadowfell. It's a city largely of undead, ghouls, vampires, and other consumptive undead, if you will, which in many respects mirrors the layout of Neverwinter. I actually, little behind the scenes trivia here. I'd actually wanted to change the map of Evernight to resemble Neverwinter less than it did, but apparently that wasn't to be. but no, I really had a lot of fun playing with what is an undead, you know, ghoulish culture going to look like? What do they want? How do they interact with the living, other than trying to eat their faces? That sort of thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
Fae, as we were talking about, is it's the arcane / necromantic nation from way the hell across the continent that has interests in Neverwinter, and there's a pathway through the Shadowfell to get there. What else did I bring up? Gauntlegrim, which is an ancient dwarven society, basically a sort of
Lost
a mine of Moria.
I say it's the Halls of Moria.
Yeah, but which is currently occupied by all kinds of aberrant creatures and things from the deep.
You working on things from the deep? No.
No, I completely out of character.
And let's see, what did I work on?
Eric, what was your baby?
I did a lot of the surface Neverwinter, like the actual city.
Mm-hmm.
And I did Helm's Hold, basically. I mean, with the same caveats that Ari mentioned,
right.
Which was that it was a lot of work back and forth with the other designers. But I was very happy with how those turned out. I also designed several of the NPCs. In particularly, I did the new Neverwinter faction, which, like I said before, I really like the politics end of things. And since I had written a novel in Waterdeep, I was very happy to design the Lord of Waterdeep, who was up here in Neverwinter being a expansionist, imperialist jerk, or, you know, a savior of this embattled city. Good guy that he is. And I really liked kind of weaving the little intrigues into there. And I like how the Ashmedai NPCs turned out. I really like the dwarf lady with the two bladed crossbows. Big fan.
Cool. So would it be accurate then to say, based on what I'm hearing, that you guys primarily worked on factions and the gazetteer section, and that WotC handled a lot of the actual player bits, the new class things and themes and all that? Or did
We worked on a lot of the themes.
We got in on that stuff too. We did a lot of the themes.
But no, as far as the new class, as far as the Bladesinger, that I believe was pretty much in house, was it not, Eric?
That was Matt's baby, as I understand it. And he did a pretty good job. I like the Bladesinger quite a bit.
Right on.
I think it's more of a striker than a controller, but, you know.
I know the Bladesinger is one of the more discussed portions of the book.
Yep, well, I mean, you could call it a controller. I mean, being dead is a controlled status. So.
Hey, ridiculous damage is the most effective means of control.
There you go.
So do you know of any support, then, that people have for some of these player options? Are we going to see more Forgotten Realms-specific classes? Are we going to see more War Priest domains? Is there going to be more support for the Bladesinger that you know of? I mean, obviously, you're not at WotC, so...
I think we're probably likely to at least see expansions on the little bits. Like you said, more War Priest domains, and that's the kind of thing that can come out pretty easily and regularly on the online material. But as far as specific plans, I don't know one way or the other.
Okay.
Yeah, same.
Or at least not that you can talk about, right?
Well, that would be true, but in my case, I honestly don't know at this point.
Well, I mean, if we can't talk about it because we don't know, or we can't talk about it because we can't talk about it, the end result is that we can't talk about it.
Right.
But no, I don't know.
Okay.
I hope so. I think that would be cool. I would love to see more realm support, and I do know that there is more realm support coming. I just don't know all the specifics.
I know some things have been announced, and some things, I imagine there's more things that we don't know about.
It's entirely possible, even likely.
I just love that answer. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I like teasing. It's just what I do.
I know.
So both of you worked on themes. Themes somewhere between Dark Sun when they were introduced and coming out on DDI and then in Neverwinter seem to have gone through some sort of, I want to say an evolution, but it really feels like more of a pruning.
Well, I know that, and, you know, I hate to say this because I'm in love with almost all things Dark Sun, but I really feel like the themes for this book, and I don't mean mine or Eric's or Matt's, but just conceptually, the idea of tying the themes so much more heavily into specific plots, or plot hooks anyway, specific ties to not just the setting, but the ongoing stories of that setting, I think is really the way to go in the future. It makes them much more than just yet another mechanical toy. It really makes them a way to hook the characters into what's going on. And I much prefer them here than in any prior incarnation I've seen.
Although I think there's a balance to each, too, because sometimes I'm running my homebrew game and I don't want something that fits your setting. I want something that fits mine or is more generic, you know?
Absolutely. But I think themes in particular are one of the mechanics that benefit more from the specific than the general. I agree completely when it comes to things like, you know, your average feat, your average class. But something about themes, I don't know, to me just speaks to being, I'd rather have more specific themes than fewer broader themes.
Mm-hmm. I understand. I agree.
Well, and I think they also give the DM a lot of... A player picks it, and that means that the DM can use that as part of their story, too. Like, it's a permission thing. And in order to have that, it needs to be a little more specific than a general, I'm a gladiator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's really cool to have the story ties because you can either use them or just ignore them. It's much harder to make them up on the spot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm more interested in giving people tools that they can choose not to use than saying, oh, make up your own tools. Because I'm a designer. That's what I do. I give people stuff to use. And I think the way the themes came out here with all the ties is really, really cool.
Now, speaking of themes, we have some of the questions we've been asking are questions from Twitter, so we've been cheating a little bit. But one of them deals with a specific theme, and I thought maybe one of you possibly could have worked on it. It deals with the Pact Outcast theme. And
I think that was mine. I don't remember for sure, but go ahead and ask the question, and I'll make something up.
Okay. Well, I think it has a very...
I think I know what this question's going
to
be.
It has a very wolfish sort of theme, if you will, to the theme.
Yeah, right.
The question is, is this theme intended, was it originally designed to be tied into the werewolves, or was it meant to be a connection to the Grey Wolf tribe?
The Pack Outcast is specifically... I mean, it... okay, let me make sure I remember what I'm talking about before I actually say anything.
I mean, it discusses the Grey Wolves a little bit in the description.
Yes.
If I can jump to your aid here a little
yes,
bit,
yes, please do, because I'm blending.
I have the book right here.
Yeah, I'm blending memories of working on the werewolf stuff with the barbarian stuff, and so yeah, if you want to jump in, and I'll just
okay, I think that I think wrong. The 4E Grey Wolf tribe, and this may have come up in earlier canon as well. I'm not terribly familiar with Uthgard, so I don't want to say something that's wrong. But the 4E Grey Wolves, we wanted to go with the whole increasing the concept of the lycanthropy thing that the Grey Wolves have. And it's kind of getting back to the legends and mythology of lycanthropy and its origins in our own world. And, you know, people would put on these skins and become like wolves, right? So we wanted to kind of infuse it with that primal mysticism. So, yes... the theme as written suggests that you were originally part of this Grey Wolf tribe, and then the Grey Wolves also have this inherent power. And the faction that you run into in the course of the campaign, or might, depending on, you know, your DM, aren't strictly the Grey Wolf tribe, but they're a section of the Grey Wolf tribe. I
that's
believe
right, and this particular section of the Grey Wolf tribe is pretty much they aren't all full blooded werewolves, but there's definitely the strain of lycanthropy in them, and many of them are full blooded werewolves.
Right, and they're completely accepting that, you know, vicious side of their nature.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so another question, kind of along those lines, is that with the themes, it can be. If players pick themes that kind of bump up against each other, you can have differing aims in the PCs in the party. Do you have any suggestions for how to still keep that moving forward and getting the party to work together still?
Well, a common enemy is a great way to unite people. And Lord Neverember can pretty much be anybody's enemy very easily. The Thayans, the Shadowvar, easily can be everybody's enemy. I think it's good to have a little bit of dissension in terms of motivation, but I don't particularly want to encourage PCs to, you know, fight each other or actively work against each other. Mm-hmm. They might betray each other's interests in some small way, but I don't want it to lead to the dissolution of a group. This is probably why I self-edited and took out references to, like, Lord Neverember will probably hire the drow assassin to kill the Neverwinter noble when it's revealed what his destiny is. You know, things like that. Because it would happen. But it would probably happen in my game versus what might happen in the standard game. And I, as a DM, love to do that sort of thing and push PCs in different directions. But it doesn't work out for every gaming group. So I wanted to be somewhat responsible in my design, at least in that respect.
And of course, the other thing, and this is, you know, this goes beyond Neverwinter to just, you know, D&D in general, which is that unless you're playing in an unusual campaign, you know, you have to go into it with the understanding that this is, you know, a group activity. You're a bunch of friends sitting around a table. And I think that there needs to be an understanding going in that even if PCs do pick potentially opposing themes, that there's going to be, you know, you're going to look for excuses to work together, not excuses to work against each other. Just part of the whole, you know, social contract thing. As far as actually explaining that away, you know, my feeling is if you've been adventuring with somebody for, you know, a few months, the equivalent of several levels, you've been saving each other's lives, then after that, if somebody comes to you and says, okay, it's time to stab them in the back, you're going to have second thoughts about it. It can lead to a lot of interesting character development. I mean, the fact that somebody begins with allegiances in one direction doesn't mean it has to stay that way.
Right. And I think that if players are actually going to conflict with each other and actually going to fight, well, characters, not players. Players should not fight with each other. The characters should fight with each other. And I think all players and the DM need to be on board with that.
Yes.
If you want to develop this kind of treacherous side to your character, specifically regarding one other character, you need to go to that player and say, hey, I want to explore this with my character. Would you be down with that? And, you know, if they say no, don't do it, because it's just going to lead to hurt feelings.
Sure.
And the DM needs to be on board with that, too. And a DM usually has a better read on the group as a whole than any individual player will. So trust your DM's judgment. If he says, no, this path you're on that's going to lead to you killing the rest of the party, don't follow it.
Right on.
Don't do it.
So I'm curious, as we're starting to run up to the end here, and I'm curious if there was one section or one faction or one class feature or something that you would want to point people to really capture the cool of the Neverwinter campaign setting, something you wrote or something somebody else wrote, what section would you tell people to read to try to get them hooked on this book? A stumper, huh?
No, there's just a lot of cool.
I mean, the easy answer is to say the entire gazetteer section, but that's, you know, what is that? That's over a third of the book.
I can't read that in the front of my game store.
Yeah, I tricked you into reading the whole book.
You know, I'd say, honestly, if you want something that's going to hopefully hook you in and give you an overview of the setting, I would say that the section on the factions. You know, it's maybe longer than a quick flip through, but it's much shorter than to the entire gazetteer. But you read the section on the various factions, you should get a really good sense of what kind of plots and conflicts are possible and ingrained in the region.
Any particular faction you think exemplifies that?
Well, to an extent, the Lord Neverember's New Neverwinter. I mean, it's pretty much emblematic of the city itself, which is obviously the core of the whole thing. Between that and I think that and the Faeans, since the Fae faction gives a very good idea of what outsiders have to gain from coming here. You get the internal perspective and the far outside perspective. I think those two together are a good starting point.
Okay.
Yeah, those are probably the two factions that are most ingrained in the actual city itself. And the Ashmedai as well. But, yeah, the Thay is... the Ashmedai is kind of between those two. Yeah. I agree. I was going to throw my hat in for the themes. Because I think the themes, they provide you with that very, very strong story as to where your character comes from, why he or she is in the city, what he or she wants. And also, it doesn't hurt that it has some cool crunch for people who are looking for that sort of thing. And I mean, just, you know, flip through them, find the picture you like the best, start reading about that one, read the others.
And I might say that if you're a DM... you should listen to Ari's advice and look at that those factions. And if you're a player, Eric's probably hit the nail on the head for you.
What a good way to put it.
There you go.
That works.
And that sort of brings up one of my follow-up or my final questions before I let Tracy take it away, because I usually run over her all over the place. Who should buy this book? I mean, obviously the answer is everybody, right? But once we accept that and that not everybody will, who should buy this book? I mean, who's this book really for?
I think there's probably more DM focused material than player focused material. So
that's probably the case.
I mean, if you're going to make me pick one particular group, it would be the DMs for who want to either expand the Forgotten Realms or build their own campaigns out of this. But I'm more inclined to say your first idea, which is everybody.
I think this is a really good book for Realms fans. I think it's very, very strongly based in the, you know, the continuous canon that's been going on for over 30 years now. And it's provided some really, really cool stuff. And I know I worked very hard, and I know Ari worked very hard in a setting that he was, you know, kind of new to bring all that stuff forward and infuse this product with a very, very strong Realms feel. So I would say if you're a Realms fan, you should definitely look at this. Because
I will also say,
I know I wrote it partly for you.
Yes, but I do want to say that at the same time, I think it's if you're like me and you're, you know, familiar with the Realms but not intimately familiar, it's actually really accessible. Yeah, there are references to Realms lore and other areas that, you know, maybe you're not going to get 100%, but the vast bulk of the book is really accessible to people who are new to the Realms, only vaguely interested in the Realms, or even just want to see how a city situation like this would develop as a campaign without being into the Realms at all.
Absolutely.
I mean, when I made the comment about it being a gateway drug to D&D, but it could just easily serve as a gateway drug to the Realms themselves.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're back to the everybody response.
Yes, we are. Funny how that happens.
Everybody should buy it then.
I think we're just going to have to go with that, yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I'm good with that. The more people buy D&D books, the more D&D books will be there for me to buy. Well, good. So I guess my final question is, if I'm playing in Neverwinter and my party gets in trouble and the world's about to end, is Driss going to save me?
Have you read Gonsalgrim? It's a joke. He's not going to save you. He's going to laugh. Oh, man. I'm going to get so much hate mail for that.
Because honestly,
save you.
Drist is off saving people more important than you.
You are on your own.
Good, Tracy. Yeah. You got anything to conclude with?
I like it. I don't know.
Right on.
I'm glad we could chat about it, and I have to now go back on my canon is bad remarks.
Yeah, you do. Because canon's not bad. Canon is awesome.
This book, canon is a useful tool.
I was finally, you know, at the part where I could accept canon into my life.
Good. Before we let you guys go, we want to say thanks for coming on and give you a chance to let people know where they can sort of find you on the interwebs or what have you, in case you wanted to accidentally talk to fans.
Like us.
I'm known on most forums under the handle of Mouseferatu. That's Mouseferatu. If you go to Mouseferatu.com, if you look up Mouseferatu on Twitter, or you can just type in remarmel.com, it'll take you to the same website. Eric?
EricScottDeBee.com, EricScottDeBee@yahoo.com. I know I'm active on Candlekeep and the Wizards boards, specifically the Forgotten Realms section under my real name, and email me. Twitter, Eric Scott DeBee. Facebook, Eric Scott DeBee. It's very consistent.
It's hard to find you. I don't.
Well, my live journal blog. Ah, Eric S D B. Totally different.
Had to change it up just for variety's sake.
Indeed.
I suspect the live journal came first.
Yeah. I was back before everyone knew who I was. Now, few people know who I am. So I got to keep it consistent.
Excellent. All right. Well, we will certainly be keeping an eye on you guys and hopefully having you on again in the future and reading lots of your novels.
Thank you.
I know, Eric, you've got a novel coming out in electronic format. Is it next month? This month?
It's supposedly September 26th.
Okay.
September 27th, something like that. Yes, my the second novel of my Shadowbane series, which is called Shadowbane, is coming out. It's about my vigilante paladin, Kaelin Dren, Shadowbane, as it were, who's basically the Batman of the Forgotten Realms and goes where he's needed and doesn't really care whether it's legal. So, yeah. Paladin who lies and breaks the law and smites evil.
Sweet. And
he's the champion of the dead god Helm.
Very nice.
Throw that in for people who were like, Helm, yay!
Very cool. And it's also cool to be a paladin of a dead god. That's an interesting twist. Ari, you're also writing novels these days.
Yes. I just had, just a couple of months ago, Pyre Books published The Goblin Core, which is both, you can get that hard copy or ebook. And The Goblin Core is basically epic fantasy by way of Tarantino, or you could call it a book about Sauron's A-Team. It's basically take your traditional epic fantasy series and turn it around so you're following the villains. The main characters are a group of what in D&D would be called humanoids, orc, ogre, etc. These are not anti-heroes. These are not gray heroes. These are not villains who do the right thing by accident. This is absolutely a book about the villains. It's very sarcastic. It's very bloody in an over-the-top Sam Raimi kind of way. And it curses more than a young Eddie Murphy. So,
right on.
My previous agent referred to it as Lord of the Rings meets Inglourious Bastards.
Sweet. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And that's Neverwinter. We want to thank Noble Knight, Ari Marmel, and Eric Scott DeVee, as well as all of you for listening.
You can get a hold of us by emailing us at thetomeshow@gmail.com. Although technically, I suppose I'm the one that checks that, but I send any messages around to the relevant parties. If you want to tell Tracy how awesome she is on the show, I'd be happy to forward that message on to her. You can also swing by the forums at gamershavenpodcast.com, where most of the conversation these days has been people ranting and raving, hey, what happened to the contest? Did I win? The answer is, well, maybe. It depends on who you are. But we have recorded those announcements, and they will be out when Sam tells us they're coming out. And you can always call us at the Tomes Biz Line at 919-BIZTOME. That's 919-BIZTOME.
And don't forget to check out the Tomes Amazon store for products discussed in the show and more, and the show gets part of the proceeds and helps keep us going.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to change the way that links. Right now I've got it linked to an actual little Amazon store that we build and maintain, and I'm just going to have it send it straight to Amazon using our sort of store ID, so you can buy anything you want and we get credit for it.
Oh, nice.
So,
and links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com.
And we're going to call that episode 183, where we've taken the Eric Scott DeBee theme and stolen the crown of Neverwinter from Ari Marmel deep in the heart of the Neverwinter campaign setting episode of...
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
I'm on the wall.
The Tome, The Tome.